President Putin, will you please hack Donald Trump's taxes? This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
I was there in Cleveland to boo Ted Cruz last week. Todd Weiler from the right.
Ballot initiative for Zion Curtin. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news. Good morning. I am Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the Political Center, and we are joined in the studio by State Senator Todd Weiler on the right. Welcome, Todd.
Welcome. Thanks.
And on the left, State Senator Jim DeBacchus.
No, there's a better feeling here because we don't have any of those House guys. I mean, I'm glad to be doing the show today.
Love it to have two senators in the room. And my sense is that you guys will help with a lively conversation. And let's just start right out with the Democratic Convention. We got to highlight the Republican Convention last week. And this week, boy, Monday started out with chaos over the emails and all the favoritism towards Hillary Clinton versus Bernie Sanders. How did you read this, Senator Weiler?
Well, you know, both Hillary Clinton and Deborah Wasserman Schultz sent out texts during the Republican convention mocking the Republicans for the discord they had, and only then to be outdone on Monday. So I thought it was what I expected. I mean, these Bernie supporters are nuts. I mean, they're crazy for Bernie.
The convention started out chaotic, but by the close of Monday night, it seemed like they
except there was a thousand delegates who walked off the floor on Tuesday night when Hillary was being nominated. So you can say that. That's the media line. But a thousand delegates got up and walked out on Tuesday night.
I will say the public message, what I saw, what I witnessed, it felt like they had reached sort of, they were copacetic by Monday night.
Well, I think now, I mean, Bernie is speaking to the Utah delegation on Thursday morning, which they're ecstatic about. I think his supporters have finally realized he's not going to be the nominee. On Monday, I think
they were still hoping beyond hope,
as were the Cruz supporters on Monday of,
Jim,
of the Republican one.
Are you in the Discord camp, or do you think they've gotten unity at this point?
I've been watching and flipping between Fox
and MSNBC, and it's
like totally complete, and with the Republican convention as well, it's like two completely separate worlds, what went on in Cleveland and what's going on in Philadelphia. And we have these two people that are so caricatured and so cartooned and so buffooned that the next 107 or 108 days, the task of the American people is going to be to decide, is Hillary Clinton the woman that was described the other night when President Clinton spoke, this compassionate, intelligent, energetic woman?
Survivor.
Or is she this cunning, mean-spirited deceiver? And the same is true with Donald Trump. You know, he has been caricatured. And the American people are going to have to go through all of this, and let's hope through the miracle of democracy, is Donald Trump that, or is he an enterprising business guy who's going to go through and shake things up the way they needed to be shaken? So I think that there is some truth there, and that all of these caricatures and back and forths and craziness, I don't think Hillary is as evil as the anti-Hillary people say, and the same is true with Donald Trump. I mean, clearly I have an opinion, but the miracle of our country is eventually we're going to go to the polls, and most of the time, not always.
most of the time we get it right.
That's
where these conventions serve a really important role. I know you want to comment on it, Todd, but I want to challenge you on one thing because I thought about this the other day. I thought it was just crazy that in the Republican convention, the two living Republican presidents weren't there. The two former nominees weren't there. It was something like 22 of 36 sitting Republican senators chose not to attend. I mean, that is serious division. When John McCain and Mitt Romney won't be there, the two former nominees, when President Bush didn't go, when the sitting Republican governor in the state it's hosted in doesn't attend— Well, I'm holding up my hands.
Yeah, you know, and Trump is, you know, he's polarizing, and Bob Dole was there. Let's just set the record straight. I'm not sure if he knew where he was, but he was
there. He was there. Good point. I concede the point.
Oh, wow, that hurts.
But yeah, you know, the Bushes are not fans of Trump.
That's crazy. And Trump has said some very— Kasich's in charge of security for the event.
You know, and isn't there. As someone who has had a lot of respect for John Kasich in the past, I was really disappointed that he did what he did, especially after he pledged that he would support the nominee. And I was disappointed with him until Ted Cruz came in and did what he did. And then I thought, okay, Kasich did it right. If you're not going to support the nominee, just do what Kasich did rather than what Cruz did.
Yeah. Cruz was something else, wasn't he?
Yeah, I was there for that.
So. Oh, Mr. Oh, really?
So yeah,
you
I was there.
Okay.
Yeah, I attended. I was
what was the mood like on the floor when he was starting to really sort of devolve into vote your conscience?
I have never personally witnessed someone douse themselves with fire, gasoline, and light themselves on fire in front of a crowd before until—
And it felt like that.
Until that night. But the ironic thing is, and I'm sure this came across on TV, is Ted Cruz had the crowd eating out of his hand until the last 2 minutes. And, you know, his supporters will say, well, what did he say that what did he say that was so wrong? And let me tell you what he said that was so wrong. It was what he didn't say, and it was how he said it. What Ted Cruz said to his supporters, what I heard him say, is don't vote for Trump. Vote for Gary Johnson or anyone else so I can run again in 2020. Yeah. That's what he was saying.
It had some self-interest.
And that's why he got booed.
Yeah.
Because if Trump becomes president, he's the presumptive GOP nominee in 2020, and Ted's ego will not let him wait 8 years to run again.
Senator Wyler and I we Twitter a lot. Or
tweet.
And Twitter. So I was getting ready. I was moved by Cruz's speech. It was a terrific speech.
This is unexplainable, Jim DeBacchus.
It was a fabulous speech about America and about
Constitution and liberty.
I was there, and I was getting ready to go, wow, I'm blown away. And then it was just one little code word, actually.
Conscience.
That he said that everybody in the building understood, and we couldn't hear on television. We couldn't really hear the booing. We didn't get that until afterwards. It was a dramatic, unbelievably interesting moment. It must have been cool to have been there.
Yeah, it was. And make no mistake, Trump had the transcript 2 hours before the speech. I firmly believe, and I don't fault him for it, I firmly believe that Trump's people— the New York delegation was sitting front and center, so they were sitting right in front of Ted Cruz. I truly believe that they knew that to start booing at that point in the speech, and once they started, it just went viral. It just caught on, and I've never seen someone so disgraced and humiliated publicly as he was during the last 2 minutes of his speech.
Interesting. They say his wife was escorted out with security.
Yeah, and you know, I shouldn't tell you this, but he went in.
Please do.
There were some corporate suites, you know. Mm-hmm. And he tried, after he spoke, he tried to go into one, and he was denied entrance. The corporate donors said no. And he went in a second one, and there was a donor there that tried to punch him and had to be restrained.
Goodness
and
gracious.
And so I think he realized immediately that he had stepped in it.
Interesting. Well, he didn't let it down the following day, so that guy is ambition-driven.
Well, I think he's done. I really think he's done. I don't think he'll ever overcome.
Well, there's one other scenario here, which is Trump gets trounced, and Ted Cruz begins the long 4-year, gee, I told you so. Mm-hmm. You know, you may have misunderstood in the room what I was saying. I was trying to stop this ugliness that came. Look, we have a George McGovern now. We didn't need to have that. That's what I was trying to do.
He would need a complete personality transplant for that to happen. And what Ted Cruz showed us at the RNC is why 99 senators don't like him.
Yeah, yeah. Why he eats alone in the Senate.
Yeah.
Except for Mike Lee.
Yeah. Hey, just to put a little bit of a Utah touch on it, you two are both senators. Senator Mark Madsen went public this week saying that he was leaving the Republican Party because of Trump, joining the Libertarian Party. What do you guys make of that? Any surprise there?
I love Mark. He's one of my favorite senators. He's not encumbered by politics. He just is right there speaking out with almost always a libertarian view anyway. So I don't know that it's a big deal.
Mark's been a libertarian for the 4 years I've served with him, so it's not a huge surprise.
It works.
We're going to miss him.
Yeah, interesting. Well, he joins others, maybe more to come. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm joined by Senator Todd Weiler and Senator Jim DeBacchus. In our next segment, we're going to talk about the Zion Curtain.
This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
This is Todd Weiler on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. Just before we jump into some other news, let's just finish up a little bit more on the Democratic Convention by talking about Donald Trump, Vladimir Putin, and emails. And what a stunning thing to me that, you know, first of all, that we get this evidence that, you know, Russia's hacking into the email servers, you know, of the Democratic Party, if that stands to be true. And then you have this scenario where Donald Trump gets on the campaign stump and urges a foreign government to now go find the, was it 30,000 emails that are missing of Hillary Clinton?
Well, go ahead and clarify. If you have them, we'd love to see them. But he didn't urge him to go out and do new hacking. I don't like how this is being spun.
And they're interesting. Okay, so Todd, is there anything you don't like about it? Because I find it any sort of alignment between Trump and Putin uncomfortable. So you have Trump saying, we're not going to defend NATO like we used to.
Trump and Putin have never met. The two men have never met. And I think Trump was making a joke today. And you know, after these DNC email leaks, I've had the same thoughts. Well, I wonder if they've got Hillary's deleted emails. Uh-huh. So he was not encouraging them to do new hacking. I mean, that would be akin to treason. I think tongue-in-cheek, he was saying, hey, if the FBI can't find these deleted emails, if you have them, maybe
with
you
this,
could let release
with this
release
tongue-in-cheek
them.
And his temperament and his recklessness,
yes.
Do you like the idea that he's getting these security briefings right now?
I like the idea that he's getting the security briefings because my biggest reservations about Trump are his temperament and his character. And I'm hoping that the security briefings will mature him in a way that life has failed to do.
Interesting. And the way I read it is, wow, this is not my guy and I'm completely uncomfortable with
you know,
him.
He wasn't in my top 10, but, you know, it is what it is, you know. I mean, I'm not going to be a Bernie supporter and kick and scream and, you know.
Yeah, I understand. So. I understand. Jim, what's your take on the email scandal and Putin?
You know, I heard the same words Todd heard, and I heard them a different way.
I can read them to you.
It goes to the broader issue.
Mm-hmm.
And as a guy who spent 20 years living abroad, NATO, for example, the core of NATO post-Europe was the fact that all of these small countries were protected under the umbrella. If you attacked one country, you attacked all of us.
Yeah, arm in arm.
And that kept the bully, whether it was the Russian bully or other bullies, out of grabbing all of these nations. Trump doesn't seem to have the historical information to understand that when you say, well, maybe we'll protect them and maybe we won't, is a great invitation to create war. And one other quick historic note. There are those that say that the Korean War started when the Secretary of State of the United States listed the places that were in the vital interest of the United States and where we would go to war, and we neglected to put South Korea on there. And it was within 2 weeks that the North Koreans invaded. These subtleties in foreign policy are immensely important. And it's hard to believe that the tiny little hands of Donald Trump should be on that nuclear weapon.
Oh, Jim, you're colorful. I'll say that. But, you know, Todd, I don't know if you have any sort of rebuttal there, but the whole notion that he's reckless when it comes to foreign policy scares the bejeebies out of me.
You know, my rebuttal would be I think that Trump, if he actually becomes president, and it's looking more and more like that could be the case, I think that what I left Cleveland with last week was this man sincerely wants to do what's right, mm-hmm. if he's lucky enough to be president. And what he said, by the way, was, Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I read that to mean, since you may have already hacked her
server. I hope you're able to find
from what you've already hacked.
Well, okay, if you want to add that's that.
Whatever it takes to find.
All right.
Yeah. Well, really interesting. Hey, let's come closer to home. But as we do that, we've got candidates or the campaigns coming to Utah. Bill Clinton coming to Utah. Jim, were you going to get an invitation to that?
I'm not paying $20,000 or whatever whatever he charges. If they let me in free, I'm going. But I don't like these drop-bys by all these national people where they come in, they fly in a millionaire airport, they zoom up to Park City, go to a house, collect $500,000, and then zoom out of here. I have baloney to them all.
If Trump and his family come, Todd, how do you see that playing locally?
I was in the room when Trump came in March, just kind of as a circus watcher. But I asked my kids, do you want to go see Trump, Kasich, or Cruz? Because they were all there that weekend in March, and they said, we want to go see Trump so we can tell
the kids did. And what are their ages?
15 and okay. 13, and they said they want to tell their friends at school that they were there. So I've already seen Trump and seen him twice now. I mean, again, I'm not going to pay money to see Clinton. If Bill Clinton gives a speech when he comes to Utah that he gave Tuesday night, I think they'll have to wake everybody up at the end. So.
Oh, I thought it was one of the great speeches ever given.
How many times did he get interrupted with applause? Wow. Oh, that's right, zero.
So Jim, I have a feeling I'm making an awkward transition here, but you're ready to entertain a ballot initiative to get rid of the Zion curtain. Look, I think if Donald Trump lived here, he would be doing the same thing.
You know, a little truth, that's my job in the legislature. virtually everybody agrees that the Zion curtain is a horrible idea. And we have a senator who is, I don't know how that senator is selected, probably the Republican leadership sit down. It was John Valentine, and now it's Jerry Stevenson, who's a terrific guy, and they become the alcohol person. So they sit down with Michael Purdy or somebody from the church, and they sit down and they say, are we going to have changes this year or not have changes? And they sit down and negotiate. And it's that senator's job to kind of go around and get the views of the industry and the rest. And that's where the decision is made. If they come out of that meeting and say, okay, we're going to change it, then it gets changed. And I said, you know what, guys? I have a Zion curtain bill, and I'm going to bring it. And Senator Stevenson said to me, fine, we're just going to kill it. You shouldn't even bring it. It's just going to be an embarrassment. And I said, you know, this is not how a democracy is supposed to work. It shouldn't be any church or any lobbyist or anybody behind a closed door sitting down with one senator and deciding whether an important public policy issue is going to be done. So with that as background, I got a lot of hundreds and hundreds of emails of people saying, this is just crazy. So here's what I'm doing. I'm putting together four or five serious non-public safety issues with the DABC, like the Zion Curtain, like the right to dine, some technical things. And I'm going to say to our good friends, here they are. These are natural, normal, good policy. They ought to be done. Now, either you pass those and we sit down as a legislature and as a community and we debate, or I will collect $1 million that I'm going to collect in pledges, and I'm already halfway there. You know, they're pledges, so, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. goodness yeah, knows. Yeah, yeah. But, and we're going to put it on the ballot, except we're not going to put on the ballot these things. We're going to put on the ballot the whole issue about should the state manage alcohol? Should we just privatize the whole darn enchilada? Because I'll tell you, of all of the agencies in state government, there's nothing as inefficient, unresponsive, horrendous as the bureaucracy in the DABC. It is a complete nightmare, and it's been generationally, as any state monopoly is, with scandal after scandal. That's going to be my message. I am not coy. I'm not playing cards. I'm saying, here's what the real people in the industry and others believe ought to change. If you guys want to handle it, fine. If not, we may win, we may lose, but we're going to make it into a rollicking issue, and we're going to go from St. George to Logan and all across this state, and we're going to say, end this communist monopoly in Utah. So we're in the process now of doing two things, raising the money, which is not that hard, actually, on this issue, but necessary on an initiative, and B, boiling down the sensible, logical things that ought to happen in liquor law changes. So there it is.
Senator Wyler, equal time.
Oh, my gosh. Is there
you don't need to take it. You
show?
Don't need to take it.
So, number one, I'm glad that Senator DeBacchus is going to, you know, is giving the state a lesson on civics. Number two, I hope, you know, the
it needs it.
the easy counter to the signatures is privatizing it sounds great until the voters realize there will be a $350 million tax increase to compensate. And that's why if it gets on the ballot, I don't think it'll pass.
Interesting.
It won't be $350 million. It's $87 million. It grosses in the order of $420 million. Actually, we grossed $420 million the first half of the year. This is going to be the biggest alcohol. So it's an $80 million issue. And if we did away with all the bureaucracy and all the warehouses and all of those creepy stores that you want to wash your hands after you leave most of them, we're talking in the nature of $80 million, and we just put a little more tax on each bottle, and we'd be out of the liquor business, and it would be done 1,000 times more efficiently.
I don't know where to weigh in from the political center, but Jim, you used the phrase non-public safety issues, you know, changes, modernization to Utah liquor laws that don't impact public safety. And to me, that is the whole enchilada, that what the interest in public safety is the public interest. And that's where the trickiness comes, you know. So how do you define which of your changes detract from Utah's great record in terms of not having a lot of drunk driving problems? And which ones would add to it?
You know, and we're not even the only state with state-run liquor stores. I believe Massachusetts and perhaps a few others have them as well. So
interesting. Okay, Jim, we will keep an eye on that. We'll check in on another time. Let's go to something equally sort of tricky, and that is Planned Parenthood and their practice of distributing condoms in the state with the letter CTR. Stands for Choose the Right in the LDS culture.
Well, you know, I have a sense of humor. I think this was a little bit over the top. These were designed for distribution at the Sunstone Symposium. So the Sunstone Symposium kind of attracts these Mormon intellects. And so I think it was supposed to be a little bit of a joke. And then it got picked up and went a little viral on social media. So, I mean, is it deeply offensive? Does it offend my religion? No, but I think it probably crosses the line, and they've gotten enough, you know, feedback that they've already pulled them off the shelves. But let's just, you know, have it in context. They weren't going to be passing these out anywhere, I think, except for the Sunstone Conference.
I think it's not helpful to a community that is needs
and
unity.
Planned Parenthood has a black eye already, and I don't know why they'd want to, pick this fight.
Jim?
Well, as a guy who does dumb things all the time, I get it. It just seems like it wouldn't have been the smartest thing in history to have done. So
it'll probably that's sort of on the margins in terms of an important issue. The addition of two new homeless service centers in this community will be a serious, serious public decision.
Yes, and where they're located. I know I hear from, you know, I got involved. I was the Senate sponsor of the homeless bills that were passed in the 2016 session. And I hear a lot from people in Midvale who feel like they're carrying way too much of the load with the center that's there. And they take pictures of homeless people sleeping literally in their front yards and things like that. And I know it's been a burden on Midvale, and it's not fair that Midvale is sharing that burden alone, but that'll make it that much harder to put it in any put the two new ones in any other community.
Yeah, Jim?
I'm looking to a briefing on Friday, I think, with both the mayors of the city and county.
Yeah, I was invited to that as well.
I don't know how they do this. I just don't know. I mean, the idea is the concentration, which is now completely out of control. If you've been down 500 West or 600, 500 West,
I thought all those people were shopping at Gateway.
It's a problem. Yeah, and you know what's interesting
is
it's an example of a problem that was easier to solve 2 decades ago, 1 decade ago, five years
like
ago.
Like everything else.
Yeah. And so this inaction has created a more complex problem.
But the idea is somehow to open two or three other shelters, one for women and one for women and children. And where? Mm-hmm. I mean, who in their right mind wants that kind of shelter in their community? Look what it does on the west side of Salt Lake.
Yeah.
Look what it does. So I don't know how they're going to do
it. I'm voting for your neighborhood, Jim.
I know it's going to West Bountiful, but,
Davis County needs to step up here. Hey, it's time for us to go to gripes. And, Jim, I know that you're loaded for bear, as you always are.
The legislature, in its infinite wisdom, last session passed a bill which was aimed at one guy who makes a certain kind of fence. It's a steel fence. And he makes it abroad. He got a $500,000 a year, and it's income tax rebate. Tax commission says 2 to 3 people maximum will benefit from this. That, if that's not bad enough, and remember that comes out of the school fund, so it gave him incentive to manufacture abroad. Bad enough, in interim, before the rev and tax, guess what happens? The same sponsor comes marching up and says, well, we got a fairness issue here because there is another 1,600 people who want that, but it was written only for one person. Cost on that one, $20 to $25 million. Time to stop all of these special interest tax issues.
Fair enough.
I just want to gripe about the presidential selections. I mean, we have two deeply flawed candidates, and it pains me to say that. I think the field of 17 Republicans probably had 15 of the most qualified Republicans we've had run for president in decades, and yet they all got eliminated. And I'm not a Trump hater. You know, I think he has the potential to be great. He has the potential to be a disaster. But, I mean,
high risk, high stakes.
Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Pathetic. Pathetic that this is the choice we've been given as a nation.
I'm going to gripe about the obvious, the dog days of summer in this heat. Goodness gracious, I'm ready to get to fall. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, been joined by Senator Todd Weiler, Senator Jim DeBacchus, program produced by Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.